Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Take Two Radio. We are pleased to bring you interviews with people in the entertainment and music industry, discussions and recaps of the four remaining daytime soaps, that's The Bold and the Beautiful, The Young and the Restless, General Hospital, and Days of Our Lives, as well as various other shows. For upcoming and previous shows, check take2radio.com, that's with the number 2, and you can find us on Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and other streaming apps. Follow us on social media at Take Two Radio, and thanks for listening.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is David, your fill-in host for Take Two Radio. I am filling in for Pam, who is under the weather right now. And with me tonight, I have Anthony and Candace.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hola.
How are you doing? So, tonight, we are thrilled to have back the talented and multifaceted Kevin Spiritus joining us. We
Yay.
Are chatting about
Woo!
The final chapter of his multi-award-winning series, After Forever, The Truth. Let's welcome
Hello.
Welcome.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, gang. How you doing? Wait.
We're doing
no
good.
No offense to the fill-in host, but come on, Pam. Come on.
I know.
Get well soon.
Yeah. Kevin, Pam wanted me to officially express her regrets because she is very much under the weather. She is she's having pain issues.
It's all right. It's all good. I was making a little light joke about it because I love her so much. And anyway, I just wanted to say,
we love you.
Get well soon, Pam.
We love you, Kevin.
Absolutely. So glad to have you back, man.
It's glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
So I'm going to start you off with her questions, and then I'm going to see if I can find my own in there. Okay? So.
Okay. All right.
Are you ready? Would
I'm
you
very ready.
Like, would you share with our listeners what they can expect to see without giving too much away?
Okay, next question. No, kidding. Let's see. First of all, After Forever is a story about love, loss, and new beginnings. That's the basic theme throughout the entire trilogy. And season 3 is no less, but no more about Brian navigating his journey through grief after the loss of his husband, Jason. And this is the season that Brian Stone, the character I play, goes into therapy. He's been claiming how much he wants to let go of Jason and the thought of Jason and put Jason's memory in the proper place since he's died. And that said, he finally, after everybody's encouragement and recommendation, he goes into therapy. And he goes into therapy with the Dr. Evelyn Silvers, played by the incredible Linda Pearl. So, and every episode this season, is there's therapy session. I know that sounds so boring, therapy session in every episode, but it works out. There's still flashbacks. There's still moments of conjuring Jason up and dealing with his pain.
Yes.
And Jason's right there in therapy with him, believe it or not. you'll see how that works out.
Yeah. That was wonderful how they wove him in there. Yeah, that's good. Are you ready for two?
I'm ready.
Okay. She says, I might be mistaken, but Pam senses some elements of Kevin on Brian. How do you navigate your personal experiences into portraying Brian?
Well, I think every character that every actor takes on has elements of themselves in that character, or there's elements of that character in themselves. That's how they I'll speak for myself. That's how I draw most characters in. That's how I create most of my characters. I find the common elements of behavior, of situations in my life, and I try as a person through my acting to heal that part of myself with the roles I take on. So if I'm hopefully doing a good job in that department, not only am I going to be healed, but your observation or your watching the story or listening to it or seeing how I portray it and how I go through the healing, hopefully you as a viewer will heal as well. That said, maybe this season is a little bit different because my collaborator, the late Michael Slade, as you have talked with before, we lost Michael to cancer at the end of 2020, and it was a tragedy, a very rare and weird life-imitating art situation. And so, yes, I had great levels of grief that I was working through in my life. Some of it gets thrown into the work. Some of it gets separated from the work. I will say this, Michael's spirit was very present through the entire filming of season three. We wrote the series. We wrote the season before he had died, and I wanted to get it done as a legacy to him as well.
Excellent. I think he'd be proud. I really do.
I know he would be.
And so, what do you think on Pam's final question? What do you think is next for Kevin?
Oh, well, this. Why don't we save that question for the end of the After Forever questions, because then I can sum that all up.
Okay, you want to? Okay, then I'll just go on. You want to go back to it? Okay, I'll just go on to mine.
Yeah, keep it all After Forever up front, and then it won't be so back and forth. And
yeah. So my question, I start. What do you believe Brian learned is the most important part of moving forward?
What would I believe Brian learned is the most... Say it again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what do you believe Brian learned is the most difficult part of moving forward?
Oh, well, again, I have to say part of... Brian is me, and part of me is Brian. I think moving forward, there's always a challenge when you have so much investment of time and energy and love that is put into the recipe of a relationship. And, you know, I think for me and what Michael and I had wanted to create in this particular situation of storytelling was when somebody dies, your relationship with them does not end. They are still very present on some level. Whether you are open to that or not is a personal choice. I also feel that love never dies. It's the only thing that's real, as A Course in Miracles would teach you. But I feel that what really is extraordinary, especially having had the loss of Michael during this this whole creative process, was grief doesn't go away either. You never stop grieving. Now, I think it becomes part of you, and it changes you, and it rearranges you. It rearranges and reassesses the being who you are. But that grief is a bittersweet, beautiful, and challenging reminder that you had loss, and that your loss is not necessarily a terrible thing all the time, but it is something that you're reinvented as a result of it. And the fact that a person goes through such terrible sadness and depression and grief about the loss of someone is because that's how deep they love someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thank you for answering that. My final one for you.
And I just want to say one more thing too.
Go ahead.
I'm constantly reminding myself that answer, by the way, that I just spewed out. I'm constantly needing to remember that. I'm constantly reminding myself, recognize my mind about that, because it is recognizing that that's who we are. We don't get out of this place without loss, or being the loss, the focus, or the object of the loss itself. So, anyway, I think that completes that answer.
Yeah, I think it does too. Well, I got a more fun question for you. A little lighthearted. You brought her up before, but you were graced with the presence of one of my personal favorite actresses. So how did you come about bringing Linda Pearl on board with you?
Excuse me. Linda Pearl, let's talk about the incredibly gifted, talented, beautiful, lovely, talented, lovely, beautiful, wonderful. Did I say that already? Linda Pearl. Linda is a friend of mine. Linda is someone who I've known for about 20 some odd years. We worked in a show together years and years and years ago, and as a result, we stayed very close and continued to have a lot of mutual work situations and friends and creative crossover, crossing over points where we just stayed connected. And she's an incredibly gifted woman in so many levels. She's a singer, she's an artist, a painter, she's a brilliant actress. And she and I found that we are very close to a lot of the same spiritual beliefs, and we're constantly having conversations about spiritual growth and spiritual reaching, so to speak, through our work and through our practices. That also leads me to, we had actually gone to several other people first. I wanted some other people. Michael and I both wanted different people. There was an order to which we had approached that role. And it came to be that at the very last minute, someone dropped out. And I really, I didn't know what to do. And I was talking with someone about going to a party the next night. And they asked me if I was joining them. I said, I'm leaving for New York to start filming. I've got to go cast some people. I can't make it. And he said, well, Linda's going to be there. I went, what? Wait, Linda's back in town? Because I thought she was on tour with a show that she was doing in Europe. And she was back in town, and I called her up immediately. I said, hey, want to play my therapist? She said, yeah. When do we start? And I said, next week. Okay, let's do it. And that's how that happened.
That
sounds wonderful. I also believe, too, that your role is your role, period. You could have a million people lined up to do it. The person who is doing it is supposed to do that role. And Linda's such a delight in that series. Boy, she's amazing. So there was a part of us that got to work out our own kind of like friendship, helpful mentor, helpful teacher, helpful shrink, you know, type of, you know, understanding each other in those sessions. So it was really great to work with her that way.
Well, thank you so much for answering all my questions. Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
Candace.
My friend. Thank you. Thank you. Hi, Candace.
Hi, Kevin. Okay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks.
Okay. So.
Hold on.
Okay. Go ahead. So I'm the emotional one out of all the hosts. When I watched this yesterday, it was a lot that was going on that I was going through it with the characters. There was a couple of lines that I was like, okay, these are now my new life quotes. So I want to thank you for that.
It's your new what? It's your new what?
It's my new life quote. Because because there is one, and I think everybody has heard this one, is we don't need therapy. Yes, you do. It's like, again, I mean, you know, sometimes we all need that. We all need that therapy, but, and there's some
others.
Well,
if you want to quote the exact line is, Brian feels he doesn't need therapy. And Paul one says, we all need therapy. And it's his experience that the people who most deny it are the ones who need it the most.
Yep.
Now, that said, I have had therapy in my life, and there's been times I thought, oh, well, okay, I'll keep going. All right, maybe I got something out of this. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, trust me. Kevin, we need to talk later about this. But that wasn't my question. So my first – both of my questions are emotional, so bear with me. Okay. So the first one is, you and Michael created a brilliant show. I'm just – you know, I've said this
thank
to you,
you
before.
Yeah,
and it's always
going to
be
thank
in my
over.
Heart as well as everybody else's. What do you hope – see, I'm about to cry now. This is great. what do you hope – there you go, folks. This is going to be emotional. What do you hope the audience takes away from this season and from this series? So that was a two-parter.
Well, there's a surprise. I won't say it, but at some point, Linda, as the therapist, says something to me, and I will just sort of say that it was Michael's line that we took from his/our acceptance speech when we won in 2019 at the Emmys, that there is life after grief. And that's our biggest want, is for any audience member to see it or hear it or watch it or learn from it, is there is life after grief, and you can still move on and enjoy life and still, you know, take that part with you. It's what we were talking about in the very first question that Pam had asked about, what did I learn? And I think I really got to come home from, I took it home into my life, was the understanding that grief is not something you do for 12 days. You take a pill and it's done. Grief is an ongoing navigating path to figure out and to ride, if you will. And that's the beautiful thing about the series and the story. Excuse me. And the story is to come to a place where you can accept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. So you got me over here crying, Kevin. Good job.
Well, I'm so touched that you're touched, and I'm so honored that it moves you. And I know it's a bittersweet, feeling, because there's so much layered in that part of the story, and then over here with me and Michael, and how, you know.
Right.
And I also believe, you know, this is, I told this before, you know, I could have been on the moon that day when Michael came up to me at the gym and said, are you Kevin Spiritus? I used to write for you on Days of Our Lives. You know, I could have been on the moon. We were supposed to meet. We were supposed to have this universal crossing point, and we were supposed to find this journey and work it out and take it together. That's my belief. And call it higher power, call it the Holy Spirit, call it science.
Right.
I don't know. But that's how it has been, and that's what it's been about for me.
Yeah. Okay, so my second question is,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just going to say it once again on behalf of the fans like myself, like David, Anthony, Pam, who shed
mm-hmm.
tears and shared the joy. We want to say thank you, and to Michael
mm-hmm.
and to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to turn this over to you on this one. Is what would you like to say to everyone who has supported this show over the last year? This is your. I'm going to give you like your Emmy moment. Because by the way, I'm supporting that.
Well, first of all, thank you. Thank you. You're so sweet. To everybody, first of all, thank you for your constant support and your constant love of the show and the series and the message it's been about. Right now, as you and I are speaking, we are having some issues getting it up onto Amazon. It was supposed to be out last week, and for whatever reason, because we're self-distributed, there's no real confirmation or timeline that they can say, here it is. They just get to it when they get to it. That being said, I'm grateful to Amazon, and we're just working it out. We're figuring it out. So everyone out there who's listening to this, if it's not up by the time you hear this, podcast, then please be patient. We're working on it, but I'm grateful to everybody, everybody who came back on the third season, and you know, we all had to hold the space for Michael to not be there, but for him to actually spiritually be there. We all just had the greatest time. Jennifer Pepperman came back and she directed the series, the season again, and she really held us together. Allison Van Noor, our producer, Jason, played by Mitchell Anderson, of course, just, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better leading man. Katie Huffman, Aaron Cherry, Lenny Wolpe, and oh my God, Anita Gillette, all these people, everybody just showed up. And a shout out to my darling, dear, wonderful person, dear friend of mine. She's the head of Theater Nerd Productions. She is the dear and lovely Laura Barquette. She gave us her studio, her 5-story townhouse to use in Manhattan, and that, of course, was always being redesigned and remodeled for our series and set up for, you know, all the rooms in the series. So thank you, dear Laura. Couldn't have done it without you.
There you go. See? Look at that. And that's a community. That is really a community that you just now, you named everybody, and like you said, everybody came back. And it was out of love.
Everybody came back. And producers and investors, yes. And that was also all of the people from everyone in season one to Anne 3 who returned as producers. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Yeah.
Hey. And like I said, you guys, I'm going to put it out there right now. Emmy nominated.
Oh, you're very sweet.
Emmy. I'm sorry. Did I say that? I think I said it again. Emmy is in the future. I see it.
Well,
I'm usually good.
Let's stay in the now, and I'll be happy with Emmy winner because the show has won 6 Emmys.
Yes, it has.
It's won writing for best 2. It's won writing for 2 seasons, first and second season. I shared my Outstanding Actor Award with Mitchell Anderson from season one. Aaron Cherry won Supporting Actress. We won
yep.
Best Directing with Outstanding Directing, for Jennifer Pepperman season one. So I'm very grateful for those acknowledgments. So we'll stay in the moment, and we'll keep it as a winner. How about that?
There you go.
Thank
you, Kevin.
And if we could, Kevin, we would send out an honorary Take Two Radio Award for you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll take that.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. We'll pass it over to Anthony.
Hey, Kevin. Well, first off, my own personal favorite shout out to Riley. Shout out to Riley, definitely. I have to acknowledge the fact that pandemic, everything with Michael, the fact that everybody came back together and that it happened, it's maybe one step away from a miracle itself. So, I mean, just the fact that season three, the closing of the trilogy, the honoring of what you and Michael did together, coming to its trilogy fruition, I think is absolutely amazing. I don't know if you believe in Buddha or God or the aliens, but, whatever external forces that also, put themselves into this to make this happen, is absolutely amazing. Go ahead.
Thank you. I was just going to say thank you. I couldn't have believed it until it actually happened, because there were a lot of challenges. There were a lot of obstacles. There was a lot of startups, and then it would drop. It would stop, and then we'd start up again, and it would fall out again. So
this is not my question, but it's got to feel, the stops must have been, crushing at points. And it's like, okay, how much more am I going to have to jump over to get this onto the track and running?
That was a constant, as a matter of fact, here I'm mentioning to you as we're speaking, I won't call it a challenge, but it's an untimely situation that for whatever reasons, we started early enough to get this up and running on Amazon, and it's not there yet. And I have to take a deep breath every morning and let it go and just say, hey, if it's meant to be today, it's meant to be. That said, there's always magic. If you find, if you find the message in the mess, there's always magic. So it's always good.
Absolutely. And I believe if you honor the love of the creation and the love of all that come together to make the creation, somehow, some way, that magic will take you over the finish line.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
So, when you first came to us, and you came with Michael, and I am so, thankful these conversations and the ones you did for Pride Connection, which is one of my podcasts besides Take Two Radio. So glad that we had the time with Michael as well. But when you guys first came to us, you told us that part of this was you wanted to write a show for gay men of a certain age,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily as they would
mm-hmm.
be the only ones watching, but that would, illustrate gay men of a certain age and coming to this third season and watching the journey. And again, shout out to Riley, because there was some great stuff in that standalone piece as well. But coming, to this place now and knowing that so many in our community got a piece that we very rarely see on screen, which is real gay men living real lives. There's some camp. We love the camp. It is true. We all camp it up when we're with our group of friends, but it wasn't camp to be camp. It was camp because that's what happens when we get together like that. And
right.
that, for all intents and purposes, it was a marriage. And then you have to grieve the physicality. I love how you said earlier in this conversation, the relationship never ends. And I truly do believe that myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you put this into the world and that there are so many out there that look at it and get to say, I see the realness of my life in this.
and I can hold this to my friends and family, you know, as an artistic representation of love is love, no matter what the physicality of the people involved are. You know, do you still feel the impact of that? Do you know how impactful that is to us in the community?
Well, thank you. You really summed up that conversation to a beautiful I know deep down in my heart of hearts that Michael and I set out to create something that was truthful and personal and close to us, and you know, I've been away from it for so long, not because of choice, but because the world had to deal with this pandemic and its two strikes that we had for actors and writers. And I'm very excited to get back up on the saddle and, you know, canter away, because I know this story has meaning to a lot of people, and not just the gay community. I when I was with Michael, I said to him, you know, I want to do a story about gay men who are not 30, because I was not 30 anymore, and I was at a different place in my life. And that's the hook that hooked him. I know that because, you know, when I was like, come on, we got to write something, he's like, get away, boy, you bother me, you know. And I used to tease him about that, but the truth is, when he knew that my intention was to create something that was about he and I as our demographic, you know, middle-aged people in general, gay men, women are not written for or written in the canvas of storytelling. And we put ourselves right there in that canvas so we could, you know, have some sort of voice. Is it everybody's particular story? No. Is it about love and loss? Yes. And again, I will say it, Michael would say it, the story is about love and loss, and we are not getting off this planet without loss. It can't happen. And if you know a way around it, please let me know. I'll write that story.
Awesome. Thank you. I actually have two more questions for you, but the next question,
yeah,
I'm going to take you back to Salem for a moment.
Okay.
I, you know, want to shout out in podcast form, you know, congratulations for your nomination last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that storyline was also very impactful in a very different way than After Forever, of course. But, you know, there was a lot of conversation about it. I mean, playing with the fabulous Greg Reichardt had to have been amazing. Having gone through that experience and having lived Kevin's experience, you know, of working in the business and being Kevin and being on a hit show and having all those things, and then coming back years later and being able to tell that coming out story, can you give us a snapshot how it felt, what it felt like when you got that nomination?
Well, there's a two-parter to this. First of all, when we were on stage at the Emmys in 2019 on that Sunday night, and Friday night before, I was on stage a lot. I was presenting. I was winning. I was winning with Michael.
And you look damn good, by the way.
thank you very much. And I think the cool thing about that was that I was able to stand on that stage, as well as Michael. But I was standing on that stage, and I was looking out into this audience, and I was sort of living this very surreal moment in my mind, like, I had always dreamed of being up here winning for something. Who knew this was going to be the path, and this was going to be the way it was. It was going to be something that I co-created with another talented human being. And all of a sudden, I got this hit that I'm going to go back on to Days of Our Lives and they're going to have my character come out. That happened on stage in my mind while we were winning all the stuff for After Forever. Now, I can't tell you how I knew this. I just sort of like at that time in real time in the history of Kevin and all the actors on Days of Our Lives getting up and going to work here and there, and they were bringing back a lot of characters. And I thought to myself, it would just be so interesting if they would bring me back and have my character come out, because why wouldn't they? Like, what a perfect opportunity for someone now in a position who has been celebrated for coming out with this character and this, you know, this role. And sure enough, I told that to Michael, and he, I have to laugh. He said, Days of Our Lives will never have that storyline. They will never do that. And I said, I don't know. And I'm now looking up to the heavens, and I'm just, like, watching him smirk, you know, because they did. They brought me back. So when I got the call from Marnie Saida, the casting director, her name popped up, and I said, hey, Marnie, how are you? She said, oh, Kevin, hi. You know, it's just like, well, Days of Our Lives would like to have you come back and join us in Salem. And I said, and have me come out, have Craig come out. And she went,
oh, how did you know?
Yeah. She said, well, yes. Like, you know, she was very like, she didn't know what to say to that. I just knew it. And it was one of those things you just feel in your gut. So it was an exciting moment. Yes, I got to play with Patrika Darbo and Greg Reichardt and who else? And Nadia.
Nadia, of course.
Nadia's scenes with her role and my role together. I don't know why Chloe was the real central glue. You know, they had all these people trying to get me not to marry and not to be settled with Leo. But I have to tell you, the scenes that I did, there was two scenes that I am grateful for that we had, Patrika Darbo and I had together. And it was sort of one of my last scenes in that story wrap up, where they kind of brought us back to, you know, understanding each other and knowing that we still had love for each other, and we just did what we thought we needed to do. And it was such a beautiful wrap up. I really have to commend. Oh, I can't get that. I gotta send a voicemail. Anyway, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
You still okay? A phone call tried to come in. Anyway, so that said, I was really grateful to the writers for that, and they had some beautiful, beautiful scenes with Chloe and Craig, just the way Nadia, she's always been so sweet as that daughter figure to me anyway. And we always joke about, you know, who's your daddy, you know, and here she gets to be the caretaker of her dad and be the open arms as he would cry in her arms about being hurt from love, which I think is such a beautiful turnaround, because all those years prior, when I was on the canvas for a long time, you know, she was crying in my arms about not being, you know, being hurt by some boy in love and blah, blah, blah. So so that was a good story for me as well. And I also think there was a beautiful, beautiful scene that they had done between Leo and Craig when he says, do you think we can get back together? And I said, no, Leo.
Sitting in the cafe,
We can't get back together, but I will say this. I'm grateful that you helped me, you know who I am, and for that I will always love you. So get your bags and get the hell out. You know, so that was that. But they really handled that very nicely, I think.
Yeah.
So
you have a question from Pam to answer, but I'm going to build on that. And it's funny, Pam had that question. I didn't look. We trade our questions, but I've been very, very busy the last 2 days. And
right.
My final question for you is, after all is said and done, is Brian okay and is Jason okay? So you can do mine and then wrap up with Pam's.
Okay, so your question is, Again, say it again.
Without, you know, without giving anything away for the arc of season three, is Brian okay and is Jason okay? Are they moving on to something? Basically, do we see them move on to something more for themselves?
Is there another season? Is what you were asking? No. First of all, spoiler alert: Jason's dead. So
right.
Jason's going to be okay regardless. But you have to remember that, you know, the scenes with Brian and Jason in the present are no more than conversations that Brian is having in his head, in his mind.
If you really
want to pull it apart and look at it. So is Brian okay? I think we wrap this up in a beautiful positive forward way. As I said earlier on, you know, grief doesn't have any type of rule book or playbook or how to get through it, and it's not something you start on Tuesday and end a month from Wednesday. You know, it's really a presence. It's like grief is like a flowing stream. Sometimes it's as big as a river or a tidal wave, and sometimes it dries up a little bit. But if people can really go with it, you'll see that I think Brian learns how to put everything into perspective in a beautiful way. I mean, that's not giving too much away, but it's coming to an end, and I have to believe that we all get something out of it. I think the thing that's really great is that there's storylines that Brian has to come to terms with and deal with through the friends and through the external stuff that Jason had, you know, had his hand in. I'll leave it at that. But it ends in a beautiful way, and I think there's a beautiful memory that Jason says to Brian in a scene where he's conjured him up, saying, you know, pick a memory. You're always going to have memories of me. Pick one. And that's one of my favorite scenes of the entire season.
That was one of my favorites, too.
Yeah.
And it's because of where it puts us back to where we started.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
That's all you're getting with me, folks. That's all you're getting with me.
I would imagine that, you know, now that the filming is done and it's coming into the world, there has to be a space of, I will carry this with me forever, but I do have to, I don't want to say grieve, but I do have to move on from this so that Kevin can do what Kevin needs to do next.
Yeah. I think you're right on the money with that. Listen, there are other ideas that I have for After Forever when it comes to how to distribute and how to create it again with other people. My dream is to actually, not unlike they did Queer as Folk, how it came from England, and then we did a version of it here. I'd love to take After Forever and take it to England. I'd like to take it to Italy. I'd like After Forever to branch out. And it doesn't have to be me playing Brian, but I think that you know, I know who Brian is. I know the story. I would like to have it go that way. That being said, I have some other things that I've got cooking. I'm trying to get this new script finished. I have another writing partner I'm working with, a friend of mine, Gregory Allen. He's actually a producer on After Forever as well. He and I are creating a fantasy love story, time travel love story. It's gay thematic. I'll leave it at that.
Very nice.
Very nice.
So Pam's question
and
is, what?
And I'm singing again. Yeah.
You are singing again, and you are hyping up Mitchell's one-man show, and you are all over the place, you know, shouting
well,
out your
piece.
Mitchell's
one-man show, by the way. Mitchell's one-man show. Well, shout out to Mitchell. I think he's actually – I don't know when this is going to air or if this is live or how this is going. I can't remember. But Mitchell Anderson is going to Provincetown to do his one-man show. You better call your mother. That's what it's called. You better call your mother. And the story that he tells is his journey as an actor in California, in Hollywood, and his coming out. And I was present when he came out at the GLAAD Awards. That year was 1996. And I, to this day, stand on the shoulders of Mitchell Anderson and other people in that area where it's because of what he had done that was so inspiring to me, and it's part of why I had to have him be the guy that plays my husband, you know. So yeah, I'm if you had a chance to see his show, it's an amazing story. So
besides the script, what else is next for Kevin?
I'm working on a one-man show again, singing, an evening of music, I'll call it. My stories, my life, through the music of Peter Allen, that's in the works. Peter Allen has been someone who I just loved his music since I heard Melissa Manchester sing Don't Cry Out Loud 100 million years ago when I was in junior high school. And I think it's time that Peter Allen's light be, you know, relit, light that Peter Allen torch one more time. But his music is so beautiful, and it's always got a great story to it. And there's a couple other projects, but those are the two creative things that I'm kind of focusing on, and we'll see where they take me.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for answering my questions. David, do you have any follow-ups, or shall we just revel in the Kevin-ness of it all?
I want to
rebel.
Baby,
can
we rebel?
You can rebel.
We love having you, Kevin. You're such a delight.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
And I'm going to say it this way: you can kick me later, whenever we finally meet up in person. Hopefully, you bring that one man show to Miami. But come back when you do win the next set of Emmys.
I will happily come back. When and if that time happens, absolutely. I like to be optimistic, but I don't like to put anything out there that's, you know. But here's what I will say. Shout out to my nephew, Connor Spiritus, and his wife, Annie Spiritus. They had a little baby girl last night, this morning. Frankie Josephine Spiritus is in the world, and I am now a great gunkle. I'm a great gunkle. So,
Frankie,
hey, Connor. Josephine. Hey, Annie. Hey, Frankie.
God
bless.
That is a cute name. And you said,
isn't it? Oh, my God. I'm so happy for them. So
you said the baby arrived yesterday or earlier this morning?
I think it was early this morning. I think Mother's Day happened, and then it took them into the morning. So officially today is
wait a
the
minute.
Birthday.
Best Mother's Day gift after, though. Even though she went on labor.
Yeah,
she went on labor. That was Yep, she went on labor on Mother's Day, and that is the best. Oh, congratulations.
The best.
Yes.
Here's what I love. May 13th, you know, someday there's going to be a Friday the 13th in May, and my niece, my great niece, is going to go, Uncle Kevin, are you on Friday the 13th, part 7? Yeah, that's me. So you know it's going to cross over. I gotta bring it back to me, right? You guys, this has been so great.
Oh man! Once again, Kevin, I just feel like if we were all together, I would be the one giving you the standing ovation. So I'm doing it now. Because
be the one pouring the next margarita.
Oh yeah, that would be me too. That would be me too.
Well,
thank you,
Anthony. Thank you, everybody. And tell Pam to get it back. Get it
We will.
Okay.
We will. You know, we love you, man. Come back anytime, any project, or just to sit and chat with us. You know, you're always welcome here. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, man. We love you.
Love you all.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Wow.
I like that.
I just have to say, you know, I've been, God, it's almost, Candace, we're here almost 7 years, aren't we?
Yeah.
On this show.
I just had to think about that.
Yeah, you know, and to think that we have run the course of After Forever with Kevin, you know, I think back to that first conversation with Michael.
All through.
We have run the gamut with Kevin and After Forever. This is special, you know. This is really kind of special, and I had to kind of shout out between, you know, the pandemic and the strikes and investors coming and going, and you know, this almost didn't happen, and it is, you know, maybe Michael up there was playing a little bit of chess. Maybe, you know, he passed Peter a bill or something and said, hey, you know, make this happen. But, you know, it is a testament that it got finished, because a lot of projects, unfortunately,
did not go anywhere.
And it's such a beautiful story. And from someone who's in the community of a certain age, I'm not quite their age. I wasn't in junior high school when Melissa Mann, just the saying, don't cry out loud.
That I remember, I got to tell you.
Being
Kevin
a gay man of a certain age and being able to...
About the same age, so...
the world has definitely changed. And
yeah.
Even though we're looking at a lot of backsliding and a lot of political stuff that makes it feel like we might not, you know, like we might plateau and go backwards, it's projects like After Forever, you know, that keep the hope alive and that keep us, you know, believing that one day it's not going to matter who you love or how you love. It's just going to be that you love. Yeah. All right. thanks, Kevin, to always coming and spending time with us here at Take Two Radio. All right. I guess we got to get into our four shows.
Should we start in Los Angeles first?
Lord Jesus.
Okay. Nope. If we're going to start in Los Angeles, I think Candace and I together... Come on,
we
girl.
We need prayer.
We told
we need
you
prayer.
So. We
did tell we, you. We told you guys. We told you.
We told you so. We told you so. We told you so. David. Come on. Give us the rundown.
Well, she's alive.
She's alive.
Sheila is
she's
alive.
Alive.
She is alive. She's been briefed. I think Hope had probably the best reaction to all of this so far that I can tell. Steffi's in disbelief right now. Ridge is in disbelief. Liam is in disbelief. Lee? Oh, my God, Lee. I think Lee had the best one. I just love Lee's reaction to this, that she was just hiding under the sheet. And she sees the missing toe, and I can't. I mean, this is, well, thank God it's a soap opera, but I don't believe Sheila's shit one.
I mean, that's the whole point. Okay, I gotta jump in on this. First and foremost, I've seen, look, social media. I've seen all your comments. I have. To my aunt, who's probably listening to this show right now, I have heard you call me when all this came out. Now, think about this, guys. I'm at work on my lunch. I was getting ready to come off my lunch break, okay? And all of a sudden, my aunt calls my job, okay? Normally, it's my cell phone, but it was my job. So I'm thinking something was, you know, wrong, right? My boss tells me to take it in the office. My aunt calls me. Y'all know what she said to me? She said, Candace, no, she's not.
That's your aunt.
I said, what? No, she's not. And I was like, who are you talking? I'm thinking it's a relative here. She was like, Sheila is alive. I was like, goodbye. I was like, wait, you're calling my job? You're calling my job? But, okay, let me just backtrack. If you really believe that Sheila is a victim out there, I want to start a GoFundMe for you guys. I really do. Because this is what Sheila has been plotting for a very long time. And I'm going to say this.
I'm with you there.
Having sugar was brilliant.
Brilliant.
Because it was going to throw you off a little bit. I think, and wait a minute, I'm going to take it all the way back here. Shout out to whoever, I'm going to say Brad did this one, to say, hey, can we get Lauren to come over to Bold and the Beautiful? Because we're going to need her. We fans have been saying, Lauren has to be a part of this. Lauren Fenmore has to be a part of this Sheila storyline. Because it made no sense that this girl didn't know nothing about Sheila being alive, dead, alive. So kudos to them for giving us the history of their mess, okay? Now, going into the present here, Sean Kanan,
mm-hmm.
Sean Kanan,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting your Emmy reel together, honey, because
mm-hmm.
the phrase that will live on forever, ten toes, because the thing is that's how we were going to figure out if that was Sheila or not. You know how, like, some people, like Brady Black on Days has a scar, allegedly. Katie has a scar because of their heart, right? That's how you want to identify a body, is that if this person has all their fingers, thumbs, you know, all that stuff. Okay. So you got Deacon, who's been Team Sheila. But people, Anthony David, come with me to the church of William J. Bell and Lee Phillip Bell for a minute. We have been saying Sheila has been calm. She wasn't tamed. She was just calm. But what's the saying? Calm before the storm. Steffi, girl, you know I love you. But you brought the thunder. You made the storm into a hurricane. You made the hurricane into a tornado. Now we got a trifecta of all this because you, Steffi, you created this monster to come back. Sheila has only wanted a couple of things in her life. Let's go down the list here.
A relationship with her son.
Well, no, let's go back. Sheila has always wanted
love. Yeah, let's go all the way back.
Yeah, she wanted love. She wanted love. She wanted a substance, right? She tried to get that with
Johnny. You know what? Candace, we have to say, before love, honestly, she wanted acceptance first.
Acceptance. Okay, so acceptance, love. Okay, acceptance, love. She wanted that united front with family, okay? Now let's get to Finney. Finn has always wanted a relationship with Sheila. Goes all the way back to when we found out who his birth mom was. Finn, because he loves Steffi, hear me, love, put his wants all the way in the back. That's what a good husband's supposed to do, by the way, and a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I ain't saying no names, but if you're listening, hi. He said he did that. He didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, so that's being said and done. But Sheila's always wanted a relationship with Finn. But Steffi was always the one in the middle. Okay, yeah, shooting, bop, and everything else like that. Now fast forward, you got Sheila trying to play the innocent victim, but she's actually got what she wanted. If you saw today's episode, it confirmed everything that we've ever said about Finn and Sheila and Steffi. Finn is like, this is another chance for me to really get to know her, even though I know that you don't like her and everything. She saved you, Steffi. She saved you from Sugar. Jesse's over there like, what?
See what?
She's like, what? Like the word Sheila and hero don't go together. This is such a classic Sheila Carter move that this.
It is.
And I know people are like, this is stupid. This is, again.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here, Candace, and I'm going to say, you know what? Let them all say this is stupid because exactly what you just said, this is a classic move. We have taken the I'm backed into a corner space where there is no getting out of my crazy. And yet, bing, bang, boom, here we are 4 months later. And now I'm the victim collecting sympathy from the one person that I needed the most. And now I don't have to do anything else. The first domino fell. Watch, click, 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 click. All the other dominoes that I want to fall are going to fall. Except you know there's going to be a spoiler somewhere in this, and Sheila's going to come out of that little shell that she's in right now, and the Sheila that we know and love is going to emerge. But this is classic Sheila. Even when she was on the Young and the Restless canvas, there was always the front line plot, the B line plot, and the C line plot that was going on that none of us knew about. Once A exploded and B was up there, then we got an inkling of what the C was. And when the C came out, wigs came off, earrings flew across the room, boats blew up, you know, babies. We don't want to talk about what happened with baby.
Hey!
It may feel.
How about the baby?
It may feel a little stupid right now because I will agree with if you don't know Sheila from back in the day all the way forward, and again, the not just Sugar and all that, so many people don't know the whole Sugar storyline, and they don't know all of that. So it doesn't feel connected in that way. So it feels stupid. But this is not the end. This is not even the middle. This is the beginning of a whole nother arc. And the fact of the matter is, Steffi is basically Stephanie Forrester at this point. Steffi is the Stephanie of the canvas.
She's always been.
Wait, say that again, Candace?
I said she's always kind of, in this situation, Steffi has been Stephanie Senior. Because the thing is that another reason that Steffi is feeling a certain type of way, okay, yes, half of it does revolve around Finn. It does. However,
but the history. Go ahead,
but,
girl.
Yeah, exactly. But the history of Sheila and the family, which Finn found out during the, you guys remember the wedding where Brooke was kind of saying, like, hey, she has history with A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Keep in mind, Sheila also cut Thomas's hair. Y'all remember that?
Yeah.
Grandma, you know, did A, B, C, D, Ridge was in the island tunnel. Brooke drunk, got her drunk. Like, there's stuff that Sheila has done through the family that Steffi feels as though she has to be the one. But the biggest thing that Steffi is, why Steffi is the way she is towards Sheila, because of Sheila, Steffi and Thomas and Phoebe didn't have their mom for a very
their
long
mother.
Time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that has been a trigger effect since day one.
And I'm going to say this right now. You know, Mr. Bell, who I have much, much, much respect for, Mr. Bell, and all the showrunners at B&B, please don't prove us wrong right now. Please. Incorporate all this into the arc of this because you have said you have actually set it up perfectly for us to finally get all the experiences that we've been waiting for when it comes to Sheila and the history of the Forrester family and all of the tentacles that came out of it. Sheila's been with her daddy, with her granddaddy, with her uncle. She now her mother-in-law, she shot her. You've built an incredible piece of story that can rock this show to its foundation in the best way possible. And please, Kimberlyn Brown, if you happen to be listening to this, anyone who knows her, anyone from B&B, if you're the production, wherever, whoever you may be, please send Kimber to us. Please, we need to rejoice in, what is it, 36 years of Sheila, 33 years, whatever it is. We need to take at least one, forget about a half hour interview. We need a 1 hour down the memory lane. Let's hit all the highlights. Let's talk about what it, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the political career and all that, but please send Sheila, a.k.a. Kimberlyn, to us. Having said that, though, you have set this storyline up very, very well. Ride it hard.
I'm just lying.
Yep. Oh,
I'm loving
this. I just
want
to clarify. I don't think it's stupid. I think it's clever, but I don't believe.
But you can understand why people who don't know, that may have only been watching for 5-7 years, you know, that they don't understand. It doesn't feel the same way it does to us.
Yeah, because they don't know who Sugar was, probably.
Well,
yeah.
That too.
I remember her.
That's why I said, like, okay, out of the two shows, now think about this. There's a lot of characters who have history on other shows that sadly the other shows are no longer on the air. Sheila Carter, Lauren Fenmore, Ashley Abbott, make sure I got that right, Deacon Sharp, Amber Moore are the last breed to have history on both Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful. However, with Sheila, she started on Young and the Restless, but she has the most history over at Bold and the Beautiful. So it depends. I always say this. It depends on when you start watching the show to understand Sheila. And that's why I was like, I think everybody was praying that Tracy would bring Lauren over to Bold and the Beautiful. And you need the flashbacks. I always say this. If you're lucky to still have the original actors, flashbacks are the best thing to have. You can flashback. You can show you, like, all the stuff of her poisoning her, da-da-da-da-da. Because I do feel as though some people have only seen the tame side of Sheila. They haven't seen the Sheila that we all know. We know that Sheila can be messy. We know she can lace somebody's necklace with some drugs and make them go crazy to where they want to jump off of a bridge. Amber, Lauren, anybody? We know that she can be, you know, she can drown somebody, okay? She can, you know, do A, B, C, and D. And I'm going to put this out there right now. Anthony, you said Kim, right? You want Kim on the show. Okay, let's make that happen here. You know who I want to see on Bold and Beautiful? I need Ian Buchanan stat.
Mm-hmm.
I need Ian Buchanan stat. And I'm sorry. Yes, Brad? Hey, how you doing? I need to know a little bit more of why Sheila is so obsessed with Finn when she does have other kids. I'm just saying. Because Anthony, if you get into my brain here, because I could see a real delicious storyline if like let's hit summer and fall for this, because I feel as though Finn is already is going to be under Sheila's thumb, like Sheila has always wanted. This is going to cause tension between Steffi and Finn. And no, I do not need a Liam and Steffi. Sorry, Liam and Steffi fans. I need a break for a minute. And I like them, but I need a break. I'm seeing something that could be really delicious. And let's go. Let's go. I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. Ian, I'm here for it. She's such a prolific character. I mean, how many kids? I remember Mary.
Dennis Ridge's half sister. Because remember Massimo and her had a kid.
With Rick, right?
No. Okay. So here's the story about Sheila Carter's kids. Okay. So we know about Mary. We know about the little baby that Massimo and her had, because remember, Sheila does have Ridge's half-sister.
Yeah, and then there's the twins.
Then it's the twins, Ryder and Daisy. It's Ryder, Daisy, Mary, Diana, John.
Diana.
Okay, yeah, so
and
that's
Finn.
It, right? Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, John Finnegan, yep. Mm-hmm.
Six kids,
and
yep.
Finn. So Diana was Massimo's.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Candace, just refresh my memory. What is the last thing we know about Diana?
That she was a
little
baby.
Yeah, refresh mine too.
That she was a little baby?
There was never anything else about her, right?
Nope.
We never saw her Saurus.
Uh-uh.
Hmm. Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's go. Let's go.
Well, you know, we started this piece of the segment off with the I told you so, I told you so, and it's not because we're, you know, soap gurus that blah, 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 but we've all been watching this since, you know, for me, it's since I'm 3 years old. You know, we've all been watching this. We all kind of knew it was just too, it was too. There was definitely an umbrella coming with all of this, and I am so down for the ride. So since we're in CBS, why don't we take that quick little jet plane over to Genoa City?
Hold up.
Okay.
Wait, hold up. Before we go to the GC, I need to say something. This is Candace's editorial for right now for Bolt, real quick. Bringing on Ivy, brilliant.
Oh, my God, yes.
Ashley Brewer, she was on Neighbors. By the way, Emmy nominated the Neighbors. Hey, y'all. Let me cleanse myself. Hope and Steffi and Hope. There's times where I need Hope to really go there and lash out at Steffi. There's times where I'm like on Steffi's side when it comes down to Hope. However, there are two kumbaya sometimes because I feel as though there's some things that can't be said and done. This is where you have the third party comes in because Ivy has history with both Hope and with Steffi, and especially with Steffi because Steffi electrocuted that girl. Y'all was there for that. Y'all remember.
Yep.
I love the fact that Ivy came back and she's like, my eyes were set on Liam. We have been saying that Liam hasn't, look, round of applause to Liam, y'all, because even though he kissed Steffi two times, he's actually been focused on being a good daddy. Scott Clifton, you've been working out. Love it. Keep fitness fit. But I like the fact that Liam has kind of taken a bow out while Hope is still dealing with the fact that Thomas and Steffi is dealing with Finn and all this drama. So here comes Ivy, and she's like, I've been thinking about you, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And she kisses him. But then Steffi looks, and I'm like, Steffi, girl, now, look, don't do it. Don't do it, Steffi. When Steffi was like, oh, my cousin comes back in town and doesn't tell me, but she's kissing Liam, I'm like, the shade of it all. I'm enjoying so far the banter between Ivy and Steffi because here's the thing. Hope is not going to do it, but Ivy is like, you know what? What do I got to lose?
Ivy's going to blow it all up. And that, remember when I said, so it was about a month ago, spoiler alert, somebody's going to come in to mess this whole thing up?
Ding, ding, ding. And by the way,
is it Ivy?
Poison
Ivy. And here's the thing, for those who keep saying Hope and Finn, okay.
I don't know.
We just now said something. Here's the thing. Ivy doesn't forget certain things. And when there's an opportunity presented, Steffi, I kept telling you, you need to really watch out. You need to open your eyes and look all the way around.
Yeah.
You think you're dealing with one problem? Oh, no.
Yes, oh, are you saying she could have two problems?
No, she could have three problems.
Well, if you really want to go there, wait a minute, hold on.
I'd be after Finn? Is that what I'm getting.
It could be four. Hold on. It could be four. I just thought about, okay, I'm just putting it out there. Hey, Brad, if Brad, Lawrence, Tracy, Rachel, all of you guys, Michael over at Bowling Green, if I get this right, I want my Venmo. Please tell me y'all not thinking about Ivy and Sheila teaming up against Steffi. Anthony,
do we know for certain that she's here to stay, or was that just a passerby thing?
I don't know, but I'm now getting hyped on my idea here that Sheila and I.
Okay, I have a spoiler. All I can say is, she will be around long enough to be the catalyst for all the dish to come out.
And we got a wedding coming up. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Just, you know, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have a bunch more. There is stuff I just cannot say.
Right.
But 2 weeks from now, we're going to have some stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. David, yep. Any last-minute thoughts on the Bold and the Beautiful?
No, I do not right now.
I do. I have one thing to say. Okay. I do. We've taken the whole journey with you. We've taken it. Okay. Y'all need to solidify what you're doing with her. And I have a feeling in 2 weeks when we talk about the whole catalyst, we're going to see where Hope is going next. That's all I'm going to say. All right.
Mm.
Let's go on over to the Bold and the Beautiful. Young and the Restless. Genoa City. And I'm going to start this off. Okay. Miss Eileen Davidson for her, what would it be, third, right? Her third Emmy next year?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It might be a tough one next year because we got some competition.
No, we definitely got some competition, but she will definitely be. We definitely will see her in that grouping of four or five, without a doubt. Eileen, girl, you know, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago on this show, when we were speculating, what is this? What is it going to be? I knew where this was going, not because I had inside information, but because I have been watching soap opera since I'm 3 years old. I knew where this was going. I didn't know it was going to be this good.
She's doing a good job. I am enjoying this.
Eileen, girl, I will tell you, I'm sorry, Young and the Restless, I love you, but this is not the best material for a DID storyline. It just isn't, compared to other DID storylines that have happened. Having said that, this is not the worst. This is not the worst DID storyline we have ever witnessed either. Now, having said that, you have Eileen Davidson playing it. Every day, you know, that she's on, at least. Okay, Candace, I'm for
Clint.
Take it over, girl.
Go, Candace. Okay, so, you know, Candace does not like a lot of DID storylines. Thank you to Days of Our Lives for ruining the last one for me to make me say that. However, and y'all thought I was going to forget about the Billy Abbott one? There's a reason I forgot about that. I forgot about it. I don't remember that. Have amnesia. Eileen Davidson said Candace.
Because they basically forgot about it.
Yeah, for real. Well, I mean, they brought it up, but, you know, okay. When I heard about this situation, I said, okay, Candace, sit back. Eileen Davidson came to me in a dream and said, Candace, baby, hold my hand. You was with me through Santa Barbara. You was with me through Bold. Honey, you was there with me for Days of Our Lives when I played 17 characters.
And
Beyonce.
When she strapped those big teeth on and said, my name's Susan. Elvis.
But no.
My little Elvis.
But no, like this one, I'm like, okay, I don't need four. Because here's, okay, let me backtrack. This isn't like this is a new situation for Ashley to have mental disorder. By the way, May is National Mental Health Awareness Month. Please check yourself out. Okay. The thing is that Ashley has had mental issues since, like, 1982, okay? And we've been through it with her. This happens to be the icing on the cake. So something has caused her to break. And she has been giving me life with this. The fact that we had Ash, hey, Ash, hey, girl, who was binging some TV shows. We have Mrs. Abbott, who is very put together, well-kept. Then we have, of course, Ashley. She's a hot mess. And then we have Belle from Savannah. I'm guessing she's from Savannah. It's
Belle,
so much
yeah.
going on. Look, I was like, okay, Aaron Spelling called. Okay, good job. But I'm like, I'm intrigued because I want to see where this is going. However, I said this a couple of months ago on this show. I said, something's going to happen to Tucker. And I said,
yep.
direct line, I said, Ashley's going to be the cause of it. I didn't know how they were going to do it. But now I'm starting to think, Josh, I know you too well. Are you going to do what I think you're going to do? Because if you do it, I see somebody else being a victim. I will say this. Eileen Davidson did her research because she said in an interview. But that's what I've been worried about the most. It's like, I did not want this to be the thing to do away Tucker. Again, we don't know anything, but this is the way it's being set up. However, with that being said, like I said, Eileen Davidson, 2023's lead actress nominee for the Young Gender Wrestler CBS. David, what do
okay.
you think? Oh, well, let's get David's take real quick.
Yep.
Go ahead, David.
Yes, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm wondering if there's anybody else coming out.
I think we're going to see at least one more personality, yes.
Mm-hmm.
One more. So we've seen Ash. That's the little girl that Billy
saw.
That's
teenage Ash. Yep, teenage Ash.
That's
mm-hmm.
what I thought was, well, like I said, that one article I saw, they labeled her Cherry, but maybe that was just their thing, but that's how I put it. But that's Ash. We got Miss
mm-hmm.
Abbott, who is, would you say she's the gatekeeper?
She is, you know what, I don't think so. I think there's somebody else who's the gatekeeper.
Yep. I
so
agree.
Maybe
the
that
gatekeeper
person
we haven't met
yet. And now we have Belle.
Look at Belle.
Okay. So I was completely on board with Candace when we discussed this the last time a few months ago. Unfortunately, I have now diverged.
Okay.
With what we've seen with Ash, I think Tucker is somehow involved or something that happened with Tucker evoked something that happened with a young, we're going to get a history rewrite or a history that we were never privy to on screen that's going to come up in this storyline. But with the way that they played Ash, there's something buried deeper than Tucker. Don't forget, Tucker only came into her life, what, 12, 13 years ago? So
right
the fact,
around the baby switch.
Yeah.
I believe
so,
it was.
So, you know, I believe that something with Tucker may have splinted and made, made the splintering
yeah.
come to light. But I believe that there's something deeper way, way back that's going to come out in all of this. And it's because of the way they're playing the Ash character of the DID. So I'm truly hoping that this isn't – Tucker's going to end up dead. They're going to wonder who did it. We're all going to know it was at least one of Ashley's personalities, et cetera, et cetera. That's
right.
been told. We've done that. We've done that on how many different shows at this point. I think if my theory is correct, I have no inside information on this. This is just a theory that I'm throwing out there based upon what I'm seeing on screen. I think that something Tucker did made the final fracture happen, but the genesis of the fracture is going to come from something we don't know about. That's going to open up a whole nother canvas storyline. And let's not forget, who is Ashley's daddy?
It is Brent Davis.
Let's all just keep that in mind. That's all I'm going to say on that. All right. So we have spoken about that. Now let's talk about the big elephant in the room. Candace, you want to guess what I think is the big elephant in the room?
What's the big elephant in the room? Jill? I was going to say Jill too. That's it.
You know what? There are two big elephants in the room because, yes, Jill. Yes, absolutely. But Nikki too. But let's go with Jill first. Go ahead, David. Tell us.
Well, from what I saw, Jill is stepping down from Chancellor Winters and letting Billy take over. If that surprises me or I just found that strange. I mean, this is going to throw the business, you know, all off kilter because we know that Devon has trouble with Billy. Nate has trouble with Billy. I think this is going to throw a wrench in it. Big fat one.
Candace? Do you think there's a secret about to come out? Thank you. Go ahead, girl.
Okay, here's the thing. Hey, Josh, look, I know that there's a lot of changes going over at Young and Restless right now, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut, but just stick to the writing, honey. Okay. Aunt Maymay, first and foremost, Lily and Devon and Nate, y'all better show y'all aunt some respect, okay? Because I felt a certain type of way about y'all. I mean, y'all little kids, so don't disrespect my eldest, okay? Regarding Billy's insertment, like, this is the earth. Okay. Aunt Mamie kept saying something was going on with Jill. Like, Jill is like A, B, C, D, F, G. Billy is all like, well, my mom said I can run the company and stuff like that, too. I need for everybody to split because this combining situation is not helping anybody. I do think there's a secret that's about to blow up, and I think Jill, that's the reason Jill stepped down because something is up on her end that probably somebody knows and – see, you know Jill. Jill always finds a way to kind of be like, well, you know what? I did my part. I'm going to roll out. But it's going to be interesting because Jill did fire Billy first and put Lily in power. Devon and Nate are like we don't trust Billy. Because they even asked Chance. They said to Chance, what do you think? And Chance is like, I'm out of this. Because Billy made a stinker about saying, hey, my legacy is on the line, too. Baby, you can create your own legacy outside. Hello, bring back Russell Style for all we care. It's something about to go down between this whole arrangement. So I'm here for it.
Yep, I am, too.
2 weeks, probably we'll have something to talk about on that front, too. Can't say what it is, but trust me. There's a reason. All right. David, talk to me about Nikki.
Oh, gee. Nikki is... Nikki's in rehab now, but that whole thing with her and Jack, that was pretty odd. And I see... more repercussions happening with Jack. I don't think he's totally over it. That, I mean, he's in it now.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I'm sorry, but that was dumb.
Candace.
Okay, first and foremost, let me say this right now. Melanie Thomas Scott, baby, first and foremost, congratulations to you because you are going to get an Emmy this year.
Absolutely.
In a couple of weeks, you and your husband will take your rightful place for that Lifetime Achievement Award, even though you should have been nominated. But you know what? I'm going to let that one slide because next year, baby, you will be nominated. Okay. Peter Bergman, the man, the myth, the legend. I'll see you next year at the Daytime Emmys as well.
Yep.
First of all, that episode, let me just say this for those who don't know, that episode actually was made history. It was the first time on any soap you only had two actors the whole time.
The whole show.
The whole show was just those two. They made history. Let me tell you something. Anthony, David, let me tell you what happened that day. We were privileged to witness greatness between those two actors, okay? We went through it with them. We saw a man who had the right idea of helping his friend, who he's been there with for 40 years. He felt as though, okay, I can fix it. I can fix anything. I can fix Nikki. But once you go, and I kept telling this to a lot of people, once you go into that environment, everything changes. The reality becomes dark. And the fact is that Nikki has already, look, this wasn't her choice in a sense because she was, remember, we got to go back. She was forced to drink because of Jordan.
Yeah.
It spiraled out of control because Nikki was trying to keep it together. But she got baited. Jack got baited as well. And with that being baited, Jack had to open up in a way that he hasn't been able to in years. You got to think about this. For years, he's been trying to be John Abbott, okay? He's been trying to be the best father, the best brother, the best son, the best business partner, the best sponsor, the best everything. When you get to that point, you break. When you see somebody that you're supposed to help, guess what? You break. You crack. Jack was trying to
I'm
going to
stop you right there for a second and just say this, because the other layer of this is he loves her.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying he wants to be with her and wants to beg her.
No.
But he loves her. He is her ride-or-die friend. And they had romantic dalliances, and maybe they will again somewhere in the future. But he loves. They have history. He wants to cure her. He wants to bring her back into the light because that's his core character.
He's doing what he's doing, what he did almost 30 years ago. Let's go back to 30 years ago when Nikki was really drunk. And Jack blamed Victor, and Victor was blamed, and Nikki couldn't get any help. And Jack had said, "You either do it or you don't." He's trying to, like you said, pull her from the darkness. But again, when I was watching this, I felt it because everything that was being said was freaking true. When Jack started to say, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to do A, B, C, D, F, G." It was crazy to think of this the way that I'm going to say it. But when he went in there, it was as if he was the one that was crying out for help and thought that Nikki would be the one to pull him from the darkness. I saw it from both angles. Because here's the thing. When he had the drug dealer's number still in his phone, I was like, oh, crap. But I understood where he was coming from with that. when he went ahead and he was like, come on, let's go loose, because here's what's been going on with my family. My sister is crazy. My son and my wife is da-da-da-da-da. When Jack started listening to his problems, and then you sit down and you're thinking to yourself, Jack has nobody to really talk to. He can't talk to Phyllis. Neil is no longer with us.
He can't talk to his son.
He can't talk to his son. He can't talk to Diane. He can't talk to Tracy. He can't talk to Ashley, because Ashley is best worst test of mess.
Billy never counts for anything.
No, Billy.
So,
Abby is just Abby. Jack has nobody to talk to. So when he was doing all of that, I was like, oh my God, he's going down there too. Nikki's over there saying, I should have been a better friend. You think? I was literally yelling at the TV. But when he did what he did and he was far gone, I'm going to be honest. Peter Bergman, you got me scared, because I kept saying something is going to happen between one of them. When Jack passed out, I was like, oh my God. I was like, now how is Nikki going to explain this? How is Nikki going to explain this to Victor? How is they going to explain this to Diane? How are they going to explain this whole situation? When Victor showed up and the disgust he had on his face, this, for those who don't know, this isn't the first time that Victor had that look towards Nikki. Because the last time I saw that disgust and his rage was when he saw Nikki sleeping with Deacon Sharp. Yes, Deacon Sharp, when he was drunk and in that hotel room. When Jack, I think Victor, here's the thing. This is such a beautiful umbrella. It's not so much that the history of Jack and Victor is being played, but the thing is that with Victor, he couldn't save Nikki from Jordan. But damn it, he can save Nikki from Jack. Victor's conscience and ego has been bruised because of Jordan. Yeah. Nikki has been ruined because of Jordan. Because of Jordan doing with Nick to Nikki, now Jack's involved, and because of what happened, now Jack is going to have to face some consequences. Because Diane said, can I trust you?
But wait, hold on, Candace, because it goes a little deeper than that. It goes down to the fact that whenever Victor couldn't, Jack could. Whenever Victor couldn't, Jack could. So that's a motivation that's always underneath it all.
Oh, yeah.
Because Victor has always hated the fact that Nikki, that his own daughter, that certain people in his life look to Jack and understand that Jack is the moral compass that Victor can never be. That's all playing underneath it all, too.
It was just delicious television, because you saw the disgust. And then when Victor comes over there to Jack, first and foremost, whoever brought back the music cue, thank you. Because when he opened the door, he was like, you stay away from Nikki. You understand. I was like, I'm gone. See, that would make me scared. I would be like, you know what, Jack? Maybe you just need to shut the door. Because now Diane feels a certain type of way. This, like I said, this is, I'm going to be honest, that week was William J. Bell. It was the spirit of William J. Bell. Because that was well crafted. That was very well crafted. They brought back the wine cellar. And from the Newmans, like when Victor kept Julia's husband, and now Julia's down there, I'm like, give me the old drama, because now it's like we have to save Nikki, who's now going to rehab, and you had Victoria and Nick, you know. Like, we didn't know. But that tells you that you're so wound up in your own lives, and we get it, that you didn't even notice your mom was drinking, boozing up and stuff. With Jack, now the question is, first of all, why did you even go down that path for Nikki Newman?
Right.
One. two, and this is me being Diane, right? Two, how can I trust you now? How do I know you're not going to go ahead and do like Nikki, go somewhere, pill popping, drinking and everything? Like, how do I not know what's going on anymore?
She's not going to know.
This is so bad stuff.
So to wrap this all up, because we have, you know, 20 minutes left and two other shows to go to, I do have to say, I have been up and down with the Young and the Restless for the last, you know, couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, we go through cycles with all the shows. You know, it's good, it's bad, it's mediocre, et cetera, et cetera. I do have to say, first off, that standalone episode, oh, my God, the writing was brilliant. The acting was brilliant. You set it up again. You know, like going back to what we were saying with Bull before, it's been set up again. We've got a lot of good, juicy stuff to play with right now. It's going to be the fallout of it all that makes
right.
the breaks. Let's not let this be the happy hooker storyline. I always go back to the happy hooker storyline. Let this be the happy hooker storyline or the, what's his name, JT that came back. Neither one of them.
Yeah,
so, Young and the Restless, we're going to talk again in 2 weeks. We're all here. We're all on the edge of our seats. Please continue to play these beats. Now, let's hop on the red eye and jump over to Salem. Candace.
Yeah. Hey.
Girl, give us the 2.5-minute recap of the goings-on in Salem.
Greg Vaughn was shirtless, and I think he was naked under that apron on Friday. For the Mother's Day episode, the truth came out about the baby that EJ is not the father, allegedly. We got Chanel and Johnny happy, but then they got the upsetting news. Because of Paulina and the radiation, Chanel was exposed. But Chanel, for the most part, doesn't have any radiation poisoning. However, surprise, surprise, Johnny and Chanel are having a baby, but the baby might have been exposed, so now there's a difficult choice to make.
Hmm.
Chanel and Paulina, they had it out where Chanel said, don't make it all about yourself, but Paulina's like, as a mother, you have to understand where I was coming from. Holly read it out, like, kind of still have an issue with Nicole because, you know, it is what it is. And to top it all off, my favorite pairing, Kristen and Alex, they got it on. I think y'all covered everything. I think I covered everything, right? Oh, and Maggie.
All
found
right,
out
David.
And Maggie found out she's being played. Mm-hmm.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
That's my favorite part.
Okay, first off, I have to give Suzanne Rogers again. I got girl.
She messed with the wrong redhead.
Oh. David, tell me right now, where do you see those two spaces going?
Which one, Maggie?
Maggie
and Constantine?
Maggie and Constantine and Chanel, Paulina and Gianni.
Oh, God. Well, Chanel, Paulina, and Johnny, it's going to, I don't know. I think if they play it right, maybe they're gonna be at odds for a while until we know if that baby is going to come or not. It's a hard pill to swallow. Paulina is her mother, and she's not thinking about anybody but herself, probably, and she's just thinking of wanting to get her girl, but I don't know.
All right, David, I love you. But I'm going to jump in here. I think that this is the storyline meant to catapult Gianni into his true Damariness. Candace, do you agree or no?
I agree because, okay, I think it was Friday. Was it Friday? Yeah. If you go to the Johnny and Chanel scene, there's a certain family trademark that was presented in that scene that I don't think a lot of people caught. But I did.
Yep, girl. And that's exactly what I was talking about. Go,
and
girl.
It was the Phoenix. They had the statue of the Phoenix was right there with Johnny and Chanel when Johnny said, we can, you know, get through anything. Here's the deal. Okay, Paulina, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm gonna give it. Okay. For those who keep coming down hard on Paulina, I'm going to give her this. When you are a parent, you don't have time to wait for anybody to look for your child. Whether it's the police,
yep.
the FBI, the CIA, Star
yep.
Trek, Air Force One. Your baby
yep.
is out there, and only you have to be the one to find that child. However, Paulina, you can't go anywhere because you were sick and you was exposed to something that is very toxic to other people. And I get it. But at the same time, if something is to happen to either Chanel or that baby, rest assured
She's
your daughter will not – yeah, no, Chanel will never forgive you. Because the thing is that if they say, you know, hypothetically speaking, this child has something and they terminate – and I like the fact that Johnny and Chanel have been talking about this because this is real. If something
yep.
happens to that child – and let's just say, hypothetically, Chanel can't have any kids after this. Paulina, you, because of that, Chanel's going to have a certain type of way. Because here's the thing. She kind of got a little smart when Johnny said, well, do you want to go see your mom on Mother's Day? No, I'd rather not. So you know Chanel is still feeling it right now.
She's feeling it.
When... Johnny, you know, like, here's the thing about Johnny. Sometimes I'd be like, are you sure you're EJ and Sammy's baby? Because then sometimes I'm just like, okay.
Girl,
then, right.
I'm right
like,
there with you, and
yes,
I agree with you 100%, but they
yes.
are setting it up to let him finally be.
Being true to America. Yeah, I mean, he's here's the thing. They had him in the beginning stages many moons ago. But now because of this, and see, this story, I'm going to be honest with you, this whole Chanel exposed to radiation and Johnny being a demur, you know what this reminded me of a little bit? When Lexi got her tumor.
Oh, I would not have gone.
Because the thing
okay.
is that
okay.
you're working with me? Because for those who
I
don't
am,
know,
yeah.
Stefano, because Stefano was looking for, like, had some gems and stuff like that, and it was in a tunnel. And Lexi went down the tunnel, and the next thing you know, she had a brain tumor. The doctor had said because of exposure to old dust, and Stefano said it could have been from, like, a mine or could have been from a tunnel. Stefano had to blame himself because that's actually how Lexi was exposed to that brain tumor. So now fast forward. Yeah. Johnny didn't expose Chanel to anything. That was Paulina. However, Johnny is his grandfather's grandson. Family means anything. And if somebody hurts a family member, rest assured, and you know how Johnny feels about Chanel,
yep.
he is going to protect that woman no matter what. Paulina.
He is Stefano's grandson, but he's Sammy's son.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, let this be, because it feels like, and Candace, you were right there. I thank you so much for being right there where I was. The
yeah.
Phoenix gave it away. I hope.
Yep.
I pray. Because we are so ready for it. You gave us, and thank you for doing it. Honest, I'm going to say this to the, I heard you all on social media. I heard you. But you know what? If they didn't give us Johnny this way, would we love him the way we love him now? And when he's about to go, you know, full Demira,
mm-hmm.
we're going to love him, but, you know, we're going to be like, ew, and ick, and yeah, yeah, yeah. So if they had brought him on as Sammy and EJ's son, the way we want Sammy and EJ's son to be from the beginning, we wouldn't be invested. I'm going this route because I think if they do this, and I think they are doing this, it's going to be good. And this actor, I don't know who he is in real life. I'm so sorry.
Carson Boatman.
Boatman, yep.
Boatman, that's right. Yeah, Boatman. He is so good. He is so damn good. He's got the chops to stand up to EJ. He's got the chops to play with all of the actors that have the, you know, the oomph. So please, please, please be doing this. I'm not thrilled how you got us here, but since we're here, we're going to deal with it. You know, I felt the same way about Gabby and the heart and, you know, Stefan, Stefano, Stefan Jr., all those, yeah, Jake, blah, blah, blah. All right. Nicole, I'm just going to say this. They're writing the exit storyline. So I don't like it. Yep. I'm not there. Really not feeling it. But I understand what they're doing. They're writing the exit storyline, so we're just going to have to write it out and hope that Days of Our Lives will come to their senses in the very, very near future, because we're 6 months ahead, and get Ariana Zucker back on canvas. All right.
And we have her final air date.
The final air date is the beginning of the last week of June.
Yeah.
What?
July.
Oh, the last week of July. The last week of July. Yeah. All right.
Anthony and Candace. Candace, I posed to you on the last show. Mm-hmm. Do you think
they're going to kill Nicole?
Keith Kent leaving Days will help Ari's case?
Do I think it's going to help? Is going to help our case?
Candace, I'm going to step in here and I'm going to take this and you can rebut if you want. Here's the thing. David, when it comes to the actual show, it really doesn't matter who's behind the scenes. People love Ari. People want Ari. When they figure out the behind-the-scenes mess, which they're in the middle of figuring it out now, people want her. And if they come back to her with an attractive offer, she wants to give the fans what they want, and she also wants to work. So we will probably see Ariana back on Days of Our Lives. I pray and hope that I'm correct in this. But basically, it's not, he's not there anymore. That definitely counts. But it's more the fact that the show needs to give us what we want to see. And she is someone we still want to see. So right. They're going to end up giving it to us at some point. Candace, do you disagree?
Okay, so I kind of do in the sense that, first, I stand with Ari.
I stand with Ari.
I have to say, because Steve Kent is no longer at Days, but he's still that Young and the Restless doing it. I think on the show, the whole Tate, Holly, Nicole, all that, to me, I'm not really intrigued because sadly we know what's going on behind the scenes. We know that Ari's leaving, so we can't really get invested into a lot of the storyline.
Agreed on that, yep.
However, from a standpoint, as much as I want to see Ari back at Days, I'm going to be honest with you. To me, this is me being me as Ari, I wouldn't go back there. It's too toxic because there are still some things that is still lingering that I can't really, you know, I couldn't go back to, if that makes sense. I do feel as though because of this situation.
Candace, I hear you on that. Let me present the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
For her to go back at this point, it would be a statement. You need me. You don't have Allison anymore. You don't have Kristen anymore. You do need me. I'm going to come back on my terms. You want me? I'll come back. These are my terms.
I see that, but I'm also looking at, and I'm just going to say, this is just my opinion on this. I feel as though, obviously, there's more probably, in my opinion. And I feel as though, yes, it would be a statement. But to some, it would be a wrong statement, if that makes sense. Because it's...
I do hear you.
I'm going to say this. Money isn't everything. It is about your pride. It is about your respect. It is your value. And
but
to me,
that's
yeah,
when
it
you
is,
sat down, if you want me, these are my terms.
Right, but
and you're
going to
abide by them. And if
but
she can make that happen, that's
that.
The message that that shows,
but,
Candace, is that if you stand up for yourself and you fight for yourself and then you go back to something that you love doing, that you know brings joy to so many people, if you can stand up for yourself and get everything you require and be able to go back and do that, what message does that show?
But I also can see the flip side of it, and sadly we've heard this, is, yeah, okay, you want it, I'll give it to you, but you're still going to have to be under my rules. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's a double floor. It's a catch-22 on that.
I hear you, but that's life. You're always going to be under somebody's rules. But I think she can get it.
But what I'm saying is that it's like, if I come back, like, okay, if I made a statement, I'm suing not only the production, but also the distributor. You got to remember, it's Sony and Kim Cordae. And if they settle out of court, right, okay, that's a win. However, going back to it, that's going to be an iffy situation. That if they do cross, if she has to cross that line.
But
it, then,
Candace, it also shows that she was never in it for the money. She wasn't looking for
that.
A monetary settlement.
But sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't have to. But see, for me, I'll just say for me, if the situation was the situation for me, I'm gonna be honest. It's not that I wouldn't want to go back. It's just the fact that I made my statement. I proved my point. It's not about the money. You're right.
But Candace, think about this though. I hear you that in your world. The way you
right.
are, I get that. It's so right. But when you listen to all the interviews that Ari ever gave over her career, she loves giving the audience Nicole.
What they want.
She loves playing that character. And so if she gets to say to them, I'll come back, these are my terms, give that to me and I'll come back, it's a victory. She gets to go back to doing what she loves. And she stood up for herself and made it so that she got what she wanted. And at this point, they're probably going to give it to her. I'm sorry to say, but Nicole is one of the key pieces of the canvas.
I agree with that. But I'm also looking at – there's a couple of things that I'm looking at because, yeah, you come back, but, again, it's a situation that is really – because sadly, you've heard the stories, you've seen the stories and whatnot. I'm not knocking everything. I do hope for the best for Ari. I do. I'm looking at the show because right now the show is gearing up for some things. I'm just curious of how everything is going to play out, and I'm hoping that it plays out for the best for everybody. For everybody.
Me too.
Yeah. So... with that being said, we only got a couple of minutes. Let me get to General Hospital real quick.
Go ahead, girl.
Okay.
The pacing is better.
Let me just tell y'all this right now. We are now officially, because the script was given Cordae and Patrick, now we're in that transition. Now it's dumb. However, let me remind you guys, ABC is still making the decisions. I just want to point that out there. Okay, so we got wedding.
We don't have
the
much
wedding
time.
Is coming
go.
Up. Okay, we got the wedding coming up. Let's see. Oh, shoot, what else is going on? Carly. Jason told everybody that he's working for the FBI. Thoughts real quick. He's working for the FBI. Sam's involved in this. What we got?
Girl, I'm going to tell you this. I'm loving the whole Heather storyline. I hear all you people on social media, but I'm so into it. Alan Mills is a great Heather. Heather is a great character. We have gotten people back from the dead multiple times. We have made love with aliens. I am so okay with letting Heather get away with a metal condition in her hip and getting back on the streets of Port Charles. I'm sorry. I am. Thank you very much. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with great shows.
Yep.
You guys, take care. After Forever. Oh. Check it out. It's not on Amazon yet, but check it out when it comes out. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
Good night,
thank
everyone.
You guys.
Bye.
Get connected with Take Two Radio on Facebook or Twitter at Take Two Radio. For email updates on future shows, follow at Blog Talk Radio. For previous episodes, upcoming guests, and more, visit TakeTwoRadio.com.